Welcome to Your Career Cure Podcast, where amazing professionals and entrepreneurs share their inspirational stories so you can get a dose of a happy career, happy life. And now, your host, Gail Tolstoy Miller.
I am so excited to have Jill Diamond on Your Career Cure. Have I not been saying for such a long time that I want you on my podcast?
Yes, yes. And I'm so excited you remembered me.
Of course, because I am so interested in what you do. I find it very fascinating and it's very relevant to what I do. So I want to introduce you. You're Jill Diamond and you are a communication specialist, especially for international professionals. So what does that mean, Jill? Why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about what you do?
Absolutely. I help folks where they speak English as a foreign language. They're fluent in the language. They do business in the language. They live in an English-speaking country. And I help them to build their communication confidence by helping them with the music of the language, the speed of the language, the rhythm, the melody of the language. And really what I've found over the years, because it used to be accent reduction, which is probably, you know, this whole conversation we're going to have around bias associated with that. But, you know, it used to be called accent reduction. And today that's just not really, I'm not comfortable with that. Because really what I've learned over the years, I'm not helping people reduce anything. Because I don't focus in on diction per se.
Okay.
But what I help people do is I help them build their effectiveness, their enthusiasm, and understand how the language works. So you're not just a good speaker, but you become a great speaker. So that's what I help people do.
Okay. So for instance, let's say someone is coming from Italy or India, right? And they're working in the United States. Are you going to have them get acclimated to how we speak in a sense, or just have them speak the best way that they can speak for their particular accent?
Original language. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, right. That's a very good question. The goal is definitely to help them come closer to a native-like speech.
Okay.
It's not about reducing or eliminating what. But for example, if you take an Indian melody, which goes up and down all the time, so I have to show them that there's too much of a melodic change here. So in English, we stay relatively flat. I talk about how many notes we might speak on, and then we highlight a word. So in that way, I am helping them to sound more American in their speech, you know, without taking away their culture and their identity, which is tied up in the way that they speak English.
Right. So how did you get into this? How did you start your profession?
Yeah. So when I was a girl, I was an actor. Like crazy. I wouldn't go to parties. I was studying. And so I was in performance. I dropped out of college when I was 20 to move to LA and pursue acting. And, you know, by that point, I had already built up all of these skills around communication. And let's see, I guess it was in my early 30s, I was a singer-songwriter in Manhattan. And all the time that I was pursuing this career, I was also saying, there's something not fulfilling enough for me as a performer. Because what I really want to do is I want to help other people express themselves. So at the time I was teaching English as a second language at the World Trade Center downtown. Mm-hmm. I was teaching at Pace University and I was hired to teach pronunciation classes. And none of the teachers, Gail, liked to teach pronunciation because of the notion of these drills. Well, you know, like drills. They're really, really hard. It's very hard for somebody to change the sound. But what I learned, because of my musical background and theater background, if I could help show people the language is in your body, let's pull it out. Let's get you to accent. Talk about accent. What is an accent? Put the stress in the right place. Don't worry if the B or the V is correct, but make sure you say manager instead of manager. And so this tapped into my passion for music. And I just over the years created a methodology that started to excite me and worked for others. And that's kind of how I fell into it.
That's awesome. You know, it's interesting. A lot of actors, former actors, get into the public speaking training arena. And I think that's very relevant to what you do as well. And it makes sense. It's like a natural transition from that to what you do, I think. I find it very interesting, especially in the workplace. Now, do you help people also in the United States?
I do. Or, I do. Like native English speakers?
Yeah.
Or yeah, absolutely. I do. The reason I ask is because a lot of my clients live and work in the US and I help them. But I would say 10% of my client base are native English speakers. So it's really a niche that I've built for myself over the years where these folks are from all over the world. But I also help people. Why? Because what I'm really trying to do is help people with the speed of the language, the pausing, getting rid of the ums. It's public speaking training, but I have a knowledge about ESL. I have a big knowledge and background in accent. So I can really help them. I understand their pain.
So I'm curious, when you went through acting training, did you go through acting training? I'm sure you went through years.
I did.
What is the language typically, right? Unless you're like typecast as a New Yorker, right? And you've got the New York accent or New Jersey, like Joe Pesci, I think of. I love Joe Pesci, but anyway, I'm saying, that's a filler, right? Because you're thinking, It's such a filler. What is the accent when you're going through acting training that they want you to have as an actor, typically? Like, is there a universal accent that...
So that's a good question. There's a myth around something called the standard American accent, which comes from Ohio.
Hilarious. All my cousins live in Ohio. And I make fun of the way that they're like dog, pop. They don't say soda. They say pop, but it's dog. Interesting. Now I'm going to have to say, they're going to like crack up.
Is it John Heisman? I'll let you know. I can't remember his last name, but he was out of Cleveland, Ohio, and he decided that where he's from was the way that everybody should speak. And so when you think of newscasters, right, this is what they look for, the standard American speech. And when we talk about code switching, are you familiar with that term?
What's that?
When we talk about, you want to get a job in corporate America and somebody says, well, you have an accent, you're from New York, you know, and it's too strong. You're never going to, you know, so we teach something called code switching, keeping your New York accent, but knowing how to move to a standard accent so that you could be more accepted. But, you know, so code switching is this ability to have two different types of accents going from one to the other. But the reason I bring it up is because today, this notion that the Ohio accent is the accent is really a myth. And I think in corporate America today, it's very hard to say, hey, I'm an accent coach. Yeah, well, we don't talk about accents here. We accept everybody. So more and more today with the diversity, inclusion and everything you know about, it's not something you can really talk about too much.
You can't, but it's real. So let's face it, right? So even within the United States, if like there's a thing between, and I don't know what it is between Texas, which is very timely right now, and New York, the accent, there's some kind of, you know, it's like the North, the South type thing. And so when you're on an interview and someone from, I'm not saying everybody, obviously, but someone from Texas is going to interview me from New Jersey, New York, they're going to be turned off because all of a sudden they have these preconceived notions of what I am from being from New York and they don't like my accent either. It's really annoying to them. So they might not hire me.
Well, let me tell you something interesting about this. It's not that they don't like us or what have you. It's they don't trust us. But let me tell you why. Go back to tribal times. And if you had two tribes living next to each other and there was a border and one person approaches the border and doesn't sound like the other tribe, danger, danger, Will Robinson, danger. And so that was a warning signal. And that's why today it's hard sometimes. I think, you know, we were trying to push through our bias, but it's hard because it's innate for us to not trust someone who doesn't sound like us.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I would think that your clients know that already, right? Like, they're are they concerned coming to the United States, or they're already in the United States, that there is some bias because of their accent?
They know, and they experience it all the time, and they are frustrated as can be.
So I'm curious, which accent, I mean, I know you don't like to really talk about accents, but I'm just curious, is there a particular accent that is most difficult to get acclimated to, you know, our type of accent?
Sure, sure. I mean, I think I named one of them. That's the Indian, the variety of languages out of India, because of the melody, very hard. And another one, I would say Chinese. And part of the reason that I always say about the Chinese is not, a lot of it has to do with the rhythm of the language, but this is pretty much everybody superimposes their rhythm onto their second language. And I'm talking like this because people don't use the right rhythm. They instead, they try to pronounce everything. And so the Chinese do that particularly a lot. But the other thing is that they're missing, they have a different type of grammar structure than we do. And because of that, they miss important words like a and the, or certain articles they might be missing. And that also changes the rhythm of a sentence. And so when a native English speaker doesn't hear the rhythm of English, they fall behind in the communication, and they have to work hard to figure it out. And I'll just finish this point by saying that's why I work on rhythm, because if you talk about a sound like R or L or B or V, the native speaker can correct a sound in their brain more quickly than a rhythm. So that's why I say, let me help you more quickly. Let's work on rhythm. Let's work on pausing. Let's work on emphasizing words with melody. And those types of things tend to propel people faster to just feeling good and knowing a technique, something they can do if the first time out, it doesn't come out right.
Right. So how long does it typically take for someone to feel completely comfortable? I'm sure everyone's different, but on average.
Yeah, I mean, completely comfortable. I would say that 15 hours is a really great start. You have 15 hours of coaching, you go through all of the techniques and tools, and then you practice your presentations with me. You know, and after 15 hours, yeah, I got this. I mean, maybe I'm going to come back and talk to you later, but I just feel differently about myself.
Yeah. And you probably see like big differences in the outcomes. Like, do you have like a success story that comes to mind?
I do. Thanks for asking. I no, because this, I love this story. About a year ago, I got a call from a CFO in California who was working at a water company. And he was Filipino, and he wanted to, it was his initiative. He wanted to work on his accent, and we did. And he was very diligent. He worked really hard. And that's half the battle. It's not just showing up for the session, but doing the homework, really working hard. And, you know, we went through, I think we did 12 hours only. And I heard I could hear the difference from the initial assessment to the end. We do a recording, and I heard the difference. So great. Good job. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. He called me on the phone. Who calls anybody today, Gail? He didn't have a plan. You know, he calls me on the phone about a month ago to say, Jill, I wanted to give you a call to let you know that I got promoted thanks to the work that we did together. And so what I love most about that story is he called me.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, do companies actually hire you, or is that kind of like a taboo thing? Like, they're not going to approach that, or are they going to say it's something else? Like, oh, we're just doing something for communication to improve everybody's communication. Or are they actually choosing people that are not from the United States? Like, how are they handling that?
Right. So it's a mixed bag, right? 20 years ago, I was all over Europe and India doing accent reduction training. So, you know, with all the big banks and pharmaceutical companies and tech companies. So you could talk about it then. And then I would say from 2010 to now, and especially in the last couple of years, I get approached by companies that have this challenge. Mm-hmm. Somebody's from China and very important scientist here for us. We can't understand what he's saying all the time, you know, and so they're very right. hesitant. They don't know how to say it.
Right.
So I try to help them say, look, you know, if it's a confidence issue, if it's you're not understanding them, I can help. And I try to stay, you know, I bring up maybe the word accent, but we don't stay focused there. We talk about how I can build their skill, teaching them to manage the speed, tap the battle. If right. you don't punctuate your voice when you speak, native English speaker included, and you just like are on a speed-a-thon, forget it. Nobody's going to get it. You know, okay, I got it, but I didn't really get what you wanted me to hear. And so anyway, it is a mixed bag. Some companies, they can't talk about it. They don't know how to talk about it. And then I just help them understand how we can talk about it.
So I'm sure you encounter different types of, I don't know what you would call it, categories. Like you just said, someone who speaks fast. Thank you. That's me, New Jersey, New York. Right. So you would tell me what? Probably to slow down, correct?
Yes, I would. I would tell you, think about when you write. When we write something, imagine you had a paragraph with no punctuation, no periods, no commas, maybe even no capital letters. Imagine how much more work you would have to do to read something like that than somebody who gave you the same passage that had the period and the comma and the dash and the capital letters and crafted the paragraph for us. So when I talk about speed, it's remembering that we think in phrases. Why don't we talk in phrases? We write with punctuation. Why don't we talk with punctuation? So it's about helping you to not slow down while you're speaking. That's the misnomer here. Don't slow down your speech. Just remember to pause. You can speak as quickly as you want, as long as you hit key words. You see what I mean?
Yes. Is that typically an East Coast thing?
I would say for sure it's an East Coast thing. Yes.
So what are the things that people do in their speech or language that you help them with besides speed? Like what's another common thing that people do?
Uptalk. Have you heard of uptalk?
What's uptalk?
It kind of comes from California.
Oh.
Right?
And Kardashian. I could do that really good. Well, oh my God. Oh yeah. Am I doing it good? Am I okay? Well, how am I doing?
Uptalk is this thing that we do at the end of our phrases where the intonation goes up at the end and sounds like a question.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Now, I will tell you, it does come out of California, but I know this because I speak Portuguese as a second language. When you speak a second language, third language, foreign language, and you're not sure, you tend to use a rising intonation in your voice on statements because you're looking for somebody to say, yeah, good, that was it. And the truth is that we need that falling intonation. Even though there are debates out there, there's some schools of thought that say, what's wrong with that type of speech? And in reality, okay, there's nothing wrong with it. But to sound confident, to not create doubt in others, you have to have that falling tone at the end of your statement. So that's uptalk.
Got it. Yeah, that's very I think of California.
Absolutely.
You know what's interesting? I have some friends from England and they are very snooty. No offense to anyone from England, because I hang out with a lot of English. My son's been trained by English soccer coaches from England since he's like five. Uh-huh. But they're very snooty when it comes to their accent. They know exactly where the person has been brought up. And they're like, oh, they have this accent. They come from like the wrong side of the tracks. I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh no, we can tell if they have money or not by their accent. I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that that's true of other languages and countries as well. You have a certain dialect and depending on what it sounds like, you get kind of boxed, right? You get put in a box, but they do. It's interesting, the British accent is very crisp and everything is pronounced, right? All of the vowels are pronounced, the T's are pronounced and everything. And American English, because we're all about efficiency, we're always looking for ways to contract and reduce sounds, right? Instead of saying 20, we say 20. And part of what I help people understand is it's not about putting emphasis on that reduction. You have to put emphasis on the key syllables. So you say 20 instead of 20, you know, like 20, like you wouldn't. So people, it's not easy to help people make that, get that. But American English is about efficiency.
So because if you think about it, the British, they kind of drag out their words a little bit. Am I right?
Yes, they hold the vowel.
They hold it. Hold.
Yes, they hold. Right. We do too. We do too. If we speak well, we don't attack the consonants. We don't bring the consonants to attack the vowels. Vowels are where we get melody and length and emphasis. But the British, yes, there's a bit of drama. It's
yes, I so love it, don't I? And it's so funny when they curse. I love when English people curse, it's hysterical because it sounds so proper. It's like proper cursing. I sound like a truck driver. It's like, especially from this area, we're pretty brutal. And it's, you know, it's interesting too. Also, when I notice for myself personally, when I get angry or very heated, my accent even comes out more. Like, I'm so Jersey, New York, it's like ridiculous. And it really does come through when I'm like very passionate about something. Right. And I'm wondering, is that normal for most people, no matter where they live?
I think it is. But I sometimes have this other experience with regard to people speaking the second language. And that is that when they're passionate and they're angry and they know what the techniques are, they tend to use the techniques better because they're not going to let this pass, right? They have to say what they need to say. So it's interesting. There's a guy out of China, Li Wang, I think his name, called Crazy English. And I don't know if he's still around. I haven't checked recently. But he would teach English in stadiums, thousands and thousands of people. And he would scream at the top of his lungs, and they would just repeat after him, screaming. And it was the volume. It was that helped them to build the confidence. And so I do think that there's something to be said about having passion behind our communication that helps us, whether it takes us deeper into our, where we're from and that dialect, or whether it helps us to really kind of use the language that we're trying to speak.
I'm just curious, not that this matters, but do you know the least liked accent in the United States?
The least what?
Liked accent. I should pronunciate better.
I don't. I don't because I think that goes back to this idea that there isn't a standard accent. So, you know, for example, I grew up in Connecticut, and my cousin on Long Island, whenever we get together, would just joke, you know, the way that I talked. I would say Gary, and, you know, Gary was his name instead of Gary, or however they say in Long Island. So, I think that no matter where we're from, somebody's always not going to like our accent. Someone's always going to make fun of our accent.
So
I don't know the answer to that.
So there's, okay. So I say dog and water.
Yes.
And in the Midwest, it's dog and water.
Dog.
And water. Dog.
Dog.
It's longer. Dog. Moving your mouth. Dog. Instead of
Right.
Water.
Right.
Coffee.
Coffee. Right. Coffee.
Oh, coffee. Coffee. Right. Is it supposed to be coffee?
If someone were trying sounds to teach you Midwest, it would be coffee.
So I have to move. Okay.
It's about dropping the jaw.
You know what's interesting? My favorite accent in the United States is probably one of the most hated accents or made fun of. I love the Boston accent.
I love the Boston accent.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I feel like it's so similar to New York, and I think because they have this, but there's something about it that I just like. I don't know what it is.
I know. I love it. And it's one of the hardest. Let's get away from, is it liked or not liked?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question.
The hardest. It is one of the hardest accents for actors, trained actors and vocal professionals. It is one of the hardest accents to get. And you can hear when you're watching a movie, you can tell when they're a little off, they don't have it exactly right.
I think of that movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, Knock. And did you see that movie? I forget the name of it.
I don't think so.
And they're in Boston and she's like, Knock? Knock. Like a narc.
Knock.
That was so funny. That's interesting. So it's the most difficult.
It is. One of the most difficult.
I find it interesting when the British actors break out into American accents. I think it's usually, what's the standard? Midwest, it seems. It's unless they have, they're in a film that's, regional, right?
Taking place in New York. Exactly. Absolutely. And do you know why, in my opinion, I think the Brits or the Australians do better in movies with American accents because they grew up watching American movies.
Is that because they pick on actors that try to do their accent, right? Is it more difficult? Okay, so let's ask this question. And I guess it depends on the country, but overall, is it more difficult for us to do accents outside of the U.S., versus someone from outside of the country doing a U.S. accent?
Right. I think that Americans are closed-minded. We're a big country. We think of ourselves, right? I mean, do you speak a second language fluently?
I used to speak Spanish fluently. But
I don't speak one fluently. I speak Portuguese as an intermediate, but I get by because people speak English. And so my point is this, that I think because of our mentality in the U.S., it's easier for other people who've been exposed more to our culture, to our movies, to our pop culture. And I think for that reason, when you're young and you grow up on something, it's part of your brain. It's there. So I do think it's easier coming into the U.S. versus like going out.
Right, right. So interesting that you say Boston is the most difficult accent to learn. What's the easiest?
I don't know. And I mean, I don't, the easiest. I mean, again, I guess I would just go back to the standard American accent, which they use the International Phonetical Alphabet to teach because the sounds are open and there's less articulation that needs to happen to block certain sounds. So, okay. And I don't want to say, because I think that today let's just say the standard.
Okay. Is there an exercise or a phrase that you have your students do and you make them say it over and over again a certain way?
Like what?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of
like a tongue twister. Are you thinking of a tongue twister?
Or just like a sentence that kind of incorporates everything and you just want them to repeat it over and over. It covers like the various vowels and the way you should say it.
Excellent question. I start my program with a limerick. I start my program with a poem because poem has rhythm. It has rhyme. It has pausing. It has music. And so I have recited for you. I have a limerick that I wrote many years ago that I start with, and it goes like this. A messenger man in the street was riding his bike to the beat. His radio loud, he moved through the crowd, enjoying it down to his feet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you have your students repeat that limerick.
I teach them each technique. I teach them where to pause. I teach them how to lengthen certain syllables, where to put the melody, how to make sure that you're connecting certain words so it's not so like staccato. And in the first module, that you can't believe from the beginning to the end, it's 1 hour, they make an amazing change in the way they speak.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Very cool. So let me ask you, in your career, like, what has been your biggest challenge, do you think, personally?
Right. I think for me, it's been, you know, keeping up with the times, right? So I've been in business over 20 years, went from just being in person and traveling all over the world to 10 years ago, starting to add in webinars and online training and then blended learning. And now just online with the way everything is today. And I think just keeping up with everything. As an entrepreneur, as a business owner, there was a time I had a whole team, COO, I had administrative support, I had bookkeeper, everything. Today I don't, because I chose a lifestyle over having that, quite frankly. Right. And so because of that, I have to do everything, right? And I do find that to keep up with it all and remind myself one day at a time, you know, that's a challenge.
Cool. Now, what about with COVID? Like, what are some of the challenges that you're facing? Or maybe it's helping your business. Who knows?
That's right. I will tell you, it's amazing. So as I think I may have mentioned to you privately, but I live between Brazil and New York. And so I would go back and forth all the time between the two countries because my Fortune 500 clients expected to see me. And today, COVID really helped me to say I can continue with my lifestyle, because now all of these executives, they know how to be online and have a training. And that has been very helpful. That has been very helpful.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So I'm going to ask you the same question that I ask everyone else.
Okay.
I'm going to try to slow down a little bit. I'm trying to, as I'm doing this, I'm paying attention to how quickly I am speaking.
Okay.
So I'm slowing it down a little bit just for you, just for the audience to see, because normally I'd be through these already. Okay.
Okay.
Is that a filler? Okay. Should I not be saying okay?
You know what? Sometimes we need to say those things.
All right. Should I? Now I'm questioning everything. You are in a $50 million Your Career Cure contest. And the first question is, if you were to cure an employee's or anyone in a career, their challenges, what would be that one cure that you would provide?
I would say that you need to be gentle with yourself. It's about not just being kind to others, but be kind to yourself, whatever you're pursuing.
Awesome. Okay, good. Second question, second cure. If you can wave a magic wand and alleviate the biggest issue in corporate America, what would it be? What would be that cure?
Now that one's tough. I think, because I wanted to say that I do, let's put it this way. The cure is this: take the lessons you're learning from COVID about accepting people for who they are, what they bring to the table, and to shine a light on those things. Take what you're learning from COVID and bring it back into live meetings and when we get back to normal. Remember what you're learning during this time about people and our hearts and our minds and our emotions. Bring it back to the workplace.
Awesome. Last question.
Okay.
If someone is stuck, it could be an entrepreneur, it could be someone in their career, what is the one piece of advice or what is the cure that you would give them to get unstuck?
Okay. I'm going to give you a tip that my father taught me many years ago. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My father was an entrepreneur. And when I was venturing out into the world, he said, "Jill, when you have a good day, don't stop working. Keep working. If you're having a good sales day, keep selling. But if you're having a bad day, stop. Get away. Go to a movie. Go see a friend. Do something for yourself." And I think that that was a little counterintuitive as a young person, because I would think, oh, I made a big sale, let me go out. No, keep going when it's good. But when it's not good, take care of yourself.
That's so true. I live by that advice too, because when things are great, you have a tendency to say, oh, I just landed a big deal. And then you kind of rest on your laurels. So my motto is on to the next. Just like, yeah, it happened, great, move on. Like, all
but
right.
But use it too, right? Because you feel good about yourself.
Exactly. But don't get too comfortable, because that, like, you become complacent sometimes when. So yeah, that's great advice. What did your dad do?
He had an industrial cleaning business in Connecticut and was extremely successful. My brother has taken it over and made it even more successful.
Awesome. And you didn't want to get into that?
I was an artist, Gail.
Oh my goodness.
Businesswoman. No, I didn't want to be in Connecticut. I didn't want to be in the family business. So it took a friend asking me to go into business eventually. So and then I went.
So did your family support you in your acting and music endeavors?
Yes and no. I mean, they always supported me emotionally, and you know, they were always my best fans. But of course, my father wanted more than anything for me to be in the business, and he just saw the potential that I never saw in myself for being in business.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I think a lot of parents, they're like, all right, well, you know, my daughter's talented, but you know, you need a backup, right? Did they say that? The typical, you need a backup. What did you study in college?
I studied communication.
Okay.
And eventually I did get a degree, and I got a master's degree in education with a background, how to use the arts as a tool for education. So I found a way to plug in my passion.
Awesome. Now, were you ever on Broadway, or was it mainly film or TV?
No, I never got as far as professionally performing and acting. I did in New York and singing, but as a singer-songwriter, but not in acting. I kind of gave it up. I didn't like the LA scene. I came back to New York and got into singing.
Awesome. Now, where did you sing? Because I was part of the music scene. I used to be in the music industry.
Oh, okay.
So I'm wondering.
In Bleecker Street.
That's where I lived.
The famous place that everybody, Bob Dylan, everybody played.
The Bitter End?
The Bitter End. So it started at the Bitter End, played at places like Shanae, played at CBGB.
My old hangout. Yeah. Well, actually, the Bitter End is on, what do I feel like it's on Mercer? It's like Lafayette, one block away.
Yeah. Oh, it's not.
It's not, it's right. It's like one block away from Bleecker.
Oh, it's up one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right on the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you performed at CBGB's. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Had a band, did all kinds of great stuff. I loved that part of my life, but I won't get into.
Yeah. Me too. The music industry is a crazy, everything they say, it's like, whoa. I mean, I've been on tour buses. Do you ever be on? Were you ever on a tour bus for a weekend? Let me tell you.
No, but what were you doing in the music industry?
I was in the recording industry. I worked for a couple
Sony,
of
right?
Yeah, I worked at Sony Music Studios, and then I also worked at Record Plant too. So you know, obviously all my friends were in the music industry, so it was crazy. But yeah, being on a tour bus for a weekend was craziness.
Yeah.
The groupies, the things that they do, I was like, whoa, this is like beyond anything I've ever seen in my life. I was like, I you can't undo that. You can't unsee it, like, in my head.
Right.
So.
Right.
But you know, it was I don't know what year you were in the music industry. Like what?
In the 90s. In the early 90s. Yeah.
Me too.
It was fun stuff, but you know, I was
crazy.
Just glad to kind of land on my feet and take my passions and help the world. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. And that shows that I think it's important for people to know that your skills, you're still doing what you love. You're transferring your skills into something else, which I think is good, right? You're evolving.
Absolutely.
And people just have to know how to do that, right?
You don't always know where you're going to end up. You don't always know. But if you tap back into and you remember what was that thing as a child that I was crazy about, and understand what was that exactly. For me, it was about self-expression. And it wasn't until just even recently that I tied those things together, because that's what I'm trying to help people do, express themselves in English.
Right. And that's creativity, right? It's being creative. And that's the creative side of you. So I'm just curious, when you transitioned from the music industry, did you go right into the communications?
So I was singing in New York while I was teaching ESL, while I already had the accent training going. But it was, to me, it was like this thing over on the side, and I was going to, you know, be a singer-songwriter. So it was a natural kind of evolution when I realized that there was something big here when it came to a career.
Right. That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. Yay. Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for being on Your Career Cure. How can the audience reach out to you and contact you? I'm going to have your contact information anyway, but...
Sure. You can send me an email if you want at jd@byjilldiamond.com. And or you can find me. You can also go to my website, but you'll put all of that there. Yeah. www.byjilldiamond.com. And that's byjilldiamond.com.
Awesome. Anything you want to promote? Anything like that?
I do.
Please tell us.
I want people to please go check out my Find Your Stage with English Communication Confidence program. If you are looking for that answer, I speak English fluently, I don't know, something's missing, I have an online program. I want you to check it out. And hopefully, Gail, you'll put that somewhere as well, because it's a little complicated to spell out. But check out the program, see if it's right for you, because it could change your life.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was so helpful. I'm so excited. You were a great guest.
Thank you for having me, Gail.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Okay.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, happy career, happy life.